Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 5, Karma Yoga, Action, Krishna Consciousness, text number 13. Sarva Karmani Manasa Sanyasyaste Sukhambasi Naiva Dware Pare Dehi Naiva Korvan Nakaryan Sarva, all Karmani, activities, Manasa, by the mind, Sanyasya, giving up, Aste, remains, Sukham, in happiness, Vasi, one who is controlled. Naiva Dware. In the place where there are nine gates. Pure. In the city. Dehi. The invited soul. Na. Never. Eva. Certainly. Korvan. Doing anything. Na. Na. Not. Karyan. Causing to be done. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he resides happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. Purport. The embodied soul lives in the city of nine gates. The activities of the body, or the figurative city of the body, are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. The soul, although subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions, if he is so desirous. Owing only to forgetfulness of his superior nature, he identifies with the material body, and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and has come out of his embodiment. Therefore, when one takes the Krishna consciousness, one at once becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. In such a controlled life in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. The nine gates are mentioned as follows. Naiva Dware Pare Dehi Hamso Leleyate Bahi Vashi Sarvasya Lokasya Stavarasya Charasya Cha. Supreme Personality of Godhead is living within the body of a living entity, is the control of all living entities all over the universe. The body consists of nine gates, two eyes, two nostrils, two ears, one mouth, the anus, and the genitals. The living entity is a conditioned stage, identifies himself with the body, but when he identifies himself with the Lord within himself, becomes just as free as the Lord, even while in the body. Shvetva Svetara Upanishad 3.18. Therefore, a Krishna conscious person is free from both the outer and inner activities of the material body. So the text again, Sarva Karmani Manasa Sanyasyaste Sukhambasi Naiva Dware Pare Dehi Naiva Korvan Nakaryan. When the embodied living being controls his nature and mentally renounces all actions, he happily resides, happily in the city of nine gates, the material body, neither working nor causing work to be done. There's always interesting points in every verse, and it's very easy to take. First of all, Prabhupada always makes it seem like it's extremely easy. You just become Krishna conscious, and you're beyond the material conception of life. So everyone, right now, please become Krishna conscious. Did it work? Just like in the ninth chapter, Prabhupada writes, it's actually the tenth chapter, the verse, Janma Karma Chame Divyam. If you see, simply say unto the Supreme Lord, my dear Lord, you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One is at once liberated. So everyone repeat that, please. Lord Krishna,
Lord Krishna,
you are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
So everyone is liberated. The only problem is you actually have to mean it. And it applies a lot of things. For instance, it applies that Krishna is the controller of everything. So how much we accept that depends upon how much we can say with conviction that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And even if we accept that, then do we actually accept that Krishna is the proprietor of everything? That he's the enjoyer of everything? And that he's the actual friend of everyone? So due to our false ego, these things are not immediately fully experienced, but they can be experienced partially as much as we take to the process. Anakalasya sankalpe. As much as we accept everything as favorable, then as we get a higher taste, we can begin to give up things which are unfavorable. First of all, we don't even know everything that's unfavorable that we're doing. For us, because it's Krishna consciousness entering into a whole different realm of experience, a whole different realm of consciousness, and we're only getting a glimpse of it at the beginning, what the actual existence of Krishna consciousness is. So, now we can at least understand some line one by one, the embodied soul. So we're the soul. We're the person who's conscious, and right now we're in the body. So that we all have experience of being in a body. And we have nine gates. We look out through these eyes, we hear with these ears, we taste with this tongue, etc. Now the activities of the body or the figuricity of the body are conducted automatically by its particular modes of nature. So everyone has a particular mode of nature, and we have abilities to utilize our senses and our working senses and our knowledge-acquiring senses in different ways. And we're doing it according to the modes of nature we're situated under. So that we have to recognize, too, that as long as we can understand that we're conditioned, that means that, to some extent, we're not fully conscious of Krishna. If we were fully conscious of Krishna, or even a little conscious of Krishna, Brahma, Buddha, Prasannatma, we'd be always joyful. We never lament, we never hanker, and we deal with everyone from the point of view of their being a spiritual being. That's before we begin devotional service. Now, if we're not on that platform, then we can understand we must be conditioned souls. And even if we were on that platform of Brahma Bhuta, we'd still be conditioned souls, but we'd be liberated from most of our material conceptions, and we could actually consistently and, well, what happens after Nishtha? One is always thinking about Krishna, never forgetting him, and the whole process is just a question of intensification, as it says in the Madhurya Kandambini. It's a question of balance. In other words, in conditioned life, when we come together and we have class or we chant together, then we feel ourselves becoming conscious of Krishna to some extent. And in that atmosphere, under those circumstances, our Krishna consciousness expands. But outside of our sadhana, then, generally speaking, our Krishna consciousness wanes to some degree, and therefore we're more prone to be in the material concept of life, influenced by the material conceptions. And as one comes to Nishtha, then there is a balance. The balance becomes equi. One is in the material concept of life, but one doesn't accept it so strongly. And when one comes to the platform of Ruchi, the material conception of life slackens quite a bit, but still one still has a material concept of life. But in that conception of life, then everything is tasteful every time. Everything is seen in relation to Krishna. And there's a taste for chanting the holy name. One can feel Krishna's presence, and one can feel Srimati Radharani's presence. One can feel taste what Krishna consciousness is all about. in the state of sasakti, then material existence is limited and spiritual existence expands. In other words, now we feel quite fortunate when we become a little conscious of Krishna. And our normal consciousness is what we're usually experiencing. But when we come to the stage of asakti, then normal consciousness is Krishna consciousness, and there's still some realm of some experience of material consciousness, although not very deep. Because at the stage of asakti, especially at the higher stage of asakti, then even if the mind wanders away from Krishna for a moment, immediately comes back again. One can't forget Krishna very easily. And in the stage of bhava, which is thousands of times more intense than asakti, then one can actually begin to feel one's own relationship with Krishna. And bhava is only one ray in the sunlight of prema. And prema is only the beginning of rasa with Krishna, or relationship with Krishna. So right now we have to understand we're conditioned souls. And still, this knowledge is very important, that our activities are being conducted automatically by the material energy or the spiritual energy. When we're performing devotional service or we're in devotional consciousness, then the activities that we're doing are actually conducted by the spiritual energy. Mahatmanas tumam paratha daivim prakritim ashvitya. Therefore, we shouldn't take credit for when we're actually doing something spiritual, because we're not actually doing anything. We're just desiring that Krishna uses as an instrument, practically speaking, or that Krishna's acharyas in disciple succession were following their instructions and they made the arrangements for us, and therefore we're acting as an instrument. So there's no need to take credit for anything we're doing. And if we do take credit, then we're Maya. Then we're in the illusory energy. We're not in the spiritual energy anymore. So they're being conducted automatically by the particular modes of nature. Now, for us, we should understand that even when we're in the spiritual energy, we're only partially in the spiritual energy. Because if we were fully in the spiritual energy, we'd be enlightened. But we're getting, our activities are being conducted by the spiritual energy as much as we're in Krishna consciousness. For instance, if I'm repeating a verse from the Bhagavad Gita, if I'm repeating anything, then Krishna is the one who's giving me the remembrance. I can't do anything. Like I can, you know, recite the verse, say from Bhagavad Gita, yatra paramite chitam nirudo yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashanatmani tushiti sukama yanti kam yatad buddhi grime tendriyam eti yatra na chayvayam sitam chalati tatvata yam lava chapalam lava manyate nadikam tata esvin sito nadukena guru na pi vichalyate tam vidya tukasam yogam vi yogam yogasam gitaha. You know that verse? Oh, you did? In Bhagavad Gita. Oh, good. So it's appropriate. That stage of perfection is called transfer samadhi, when one's mind is completely restrained from all material mental activities by the practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self with a pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in balanced transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks that there is no greater gain. This is indeed actual freedom from all material miseries by the practice of the yoga system. So, you know, I just recited that. Did I make any special effort? No, because Krishna was just automatically supplying the remembrance. Otherwise, if I try to, no one has any ability to remember anything outside of Krishna. So it may appear that, oh, I have a great memory. I don't even know if I have a memory. All I can say is I can only, you know, what Krishna wants, I can repeat these verses. And I have to listen to it also. Otherwise, I don't get any benefit just by repeating them. I have to actually hear them too. yatra paramite chitam. Now I can repeat that, yatra paramite chitam, and get absolutely nothing out of it, right? I didn't understand what it meant. And therefore, but if I learn it, yatra paramite chitam. Chitam means consciousness. Yatra, therefore, yatra paramite niruddha, by the practice, yatra paramite chitam, niruddha yoga sevaya, by practicing yoga, the practice of yoga, as Krishna has been outlined previously. Niruddha yoga, yatra taivatmanatmanam, then one becomes established in the self. Then one actually starts thinking about Krishna. So it's, the point is that when we're conditioned, we're, these things are going on both by the material energy and by the spiritual energy. But by the spiritual energy, because we're able to repeat something, this is coming from Krishna, but how much we take advantage of it. In other words, we may be acting as an instrument for Krishna, but we also have to take advantage of it. If we teach others, and we think we're teaching others, and we don't realize that Krishna is teaching everyone, including me, then we won't take advantage of what we're doing in devotional service. We may help others, and we may not be helping ourselves at all. So we have to take ourselves as an instrument, not as the savior or as a benefactor. So that's one of the difficulties of becoming a... First of all, for those who are thinking themselves the controllers, then they're not very eligible candidates to live very long in an ashram, because you learn very quickly you're not going to be much of a controller around here. There's not much to control. And as far as the enjoyer, there's not much material things to enjoy in an ashram. But to think oneself to be the savior, to think oneself to be the doer, that's, everyone can hang on to the false ego. So one should think oneself to be an instrument of Krishna. And understand that these, whatever activities we're doing, are being conducted by the material, by the spiritual energy, or a combination of both. The spiritual energy and the material energy. For instance, we should all act according to our nature, and that nature means we do our service according to what our capacity is. And at the same time, Prabhupada writes, we should have a full sense of Krishna consciousness. While we're doing our activities, we should understand that the spiritual nature is carrying out these activities. And at the same time, we should try to develop an actual sense of being, what it means to be Krishna conscious. And the soul, though subjecting himself to the conditions of the body, can be beyond those conditions. So that's what we're trying to do, is go to beyond those conditions. Hopefully that's what we're trying to do, if he so desires. So it all depends on our desire. How to cultivate the proper desire? Well, that we have to find out from acharyas, actually. For instance, when I sing the Nishingade prayers in the morning. Now, mostly what happens when we're in a temple, if you've been around for enough years, everything becomes mechanical. Oh, now it's time to sing Nishingade prayers. So we just sing the Nishingade prayers as if, you know, we were singing a nursery rhyme. Namaste, Narasingha. So the point is, that if we don't get any experience by singing it one day, we'll assume tomorrow I'm going to get the same non-experience the next day when I sing it. Because yesterday I didn't get any experience, so why should I get any experience today? But the real point is that we have to find out why we're not getting experience. So one of the ways of doing it is because we're not singing it properly. We may know the words, we think we know the words, but we don't have the proper mood. So how to get the proper mood? Well, if we add something like Prahlad into it, what is the mood of Prahlad? And we try to become aware of what his mood was in relation to Lord Nrsimhadev, then we might sing it a little bit more sincerely. Somehow or another, something like that. To take some devotee, add something to it, to our consciousness. So we try to actually sing it with some more attention, more love, we could say, more carefully, more aware. And then Lord Nisshinkadeva will reciprocate with us. And then we'll actually get some experience when we're chanting. Well, at least we'll become more aware of what we're doing. So the main obstacle is our conditioned nature. And we actually believe that whatever we're experiencing now is real. And we don't realize that we're just going through our conditioned nature unless we make a real effort to add something to it, to add Krishna consciousness to it. Just try to not make it mechanical or habitual of what we're doing, to try to make it more attentive, more sincere. That's probably right, the nectar devotion. That Krishna consciousness depends upon nothing more than sincerity. So that's a good thing. When we're chanting, for instance, we should try to hear ourselves chanting sincerely. Now, if we chant mechanically, we get our rounds done thinking we've accomplished something. Yeah, we've accomplished something. We did a little exercise by pulling down the counter beads. So we got a little, you know, finger exercise. But the real exercise should be to try to change our chanting, because if we're not seeing Krishna directly every time we say Hare Krishna, if we're not seeing Srimati Radharani directly and experiencing, you know, Krishna prema at least, then the result, we must be doing so. Our chanting is not on the level of sincerity that it has to be to actually become Krishna conscious. And why is that? Because we don't really feel that we really need Krishna very much. We don't really feel we're separated from Krishna, or that it doesn't make it, it's a big thing in our existence that we're separated from Krishna, or that whatever, we're not really understanding what's going on in reality. So we have to try. And then didadami buddhi yogam tam. If we try, then Krishna will give us intelligence up to a point, up to the point that we required it and deserve it. And then he'll reciprocate with us up to a point that we don't become proud. And now I got it. I remember going on book distribution. And you go on book distribution, no one would stop. Everyone would say, get lost. You think, what am I doing out here? These are all demons. I came to the wrong place. Maybe I should find some place where they like me, where they're a little more receptive. And if you stick with it, after a while, you find out the problem is not just with them, it's also with me. That I have the wrong attitude, that I'm not getting Krishna's mercy. I don't have the enthusiasm, I don't have the consciousness, I don't have the desire, I'm lacking something. And then one starts relying upon Krishna, and people start stopping, and you get the inspiration, the energy, the intelligence, how to distribute the book. Then after a while you get proud. I'm in control here. I got it all down. I learned the technique. And then everyone starts telling you to get lost again. Or you go back and you distributed so many books and you want everyone to worship you because you're part of the divine energy. And people look at it like you're puffed up. Who do you think you are? Where do you think you came from? I'm the Maharati. So many of the Maharatis are no longer even on a chariot anymore. So Krishna has to teach us. We get a little insight, we apply it, we get a little experience in Krishna consciousness, we become proud, and then we have to get back to our humility again so we can start praying to Krishna for the intelligence to make some spiritual advancement, get some insight. And that goes on to a certain extent. After liberation, then one doesn't fall into that position of being artificially proud. But Krishna will still, eternally, that's part of the process. In other words, even sometimes Krishna, he leaves Srimati Radharani, who is a little bit more advanced than we are. And she starts getting, she feels humility that I did something wrong. Of course, Srimati Radharani never does anything wrong. It's not possible. But she gets the feeling she's done something wrong. That helps her spiritual advancement, because there has to be something, reason, to make spiritual advancement, even when you're on the most topmost inconceivable platform. So that position to make spiritual advancement is necessary for all of us. Even in the spiritual world, conditions are arranged so that Radha and Krishna become more and more anxious to meet each other. So what to speak of here? So that's being arranged for us. And part of that is, part of the insight is to understand that actually I shouldn't take the credit for what I'm doing. I should see that this is all going on by the mercy of my spiritual master in Krishna, and that I should also learn from what I'm doing, what I think I'm doing, not only try to teach others, but also learn myself on what I'm saying and what I'm doing, so I can make spiritual advancement too, not only the people I'm speaking to. And then, only owing to forgetfulness of superior nature, he identifies with the material body and therefore suffers. By Krishna consciousness, he can revive his real position and then come out of his embodiment. So whenever this word Krishna consciousness comes up, it has to mean something to us. Especially when we're studying these books and reading them, it should mean something. What does it mean? Krishna consciousness. Of course, it means to become conscious of Krishna, but then we should think, what is the process of actually becoming conscious of Krishna? To accept, first of all, it's always three things. To accept everything here belongs to Krishna, and to accept that everything is meant for Krishna's service, and to accept that Krishna is our real friend, and therefore, whatever I'm doing, I should do to please Krishna. And the result is I should naturally think about Krishna. So that's called Krishna consciousness. I said that's perfect Krishna consciousness. Now, circumstances that we're under at times put that to test more than other times. Everything's going all right. Then no problem. Krishna's the owner of everything. I didn't want, no problem for me. And he's the enjoyer. I should find out what Krishna wants me to do from his representatives, and I should do it. And I should do it to please him. So in normal times. But if we get sick, if there's some disturbance, if we get into a fight with someone, anxiety over something, then it's very hard to remember that actually Krishna is the controller, that Krishna is the enjoyer, that Krishna is the friend. Or if we do something and everyone's praising you, oh, you did it great, Prabhu. It's very hard to say, well, to remember, actually I'm supposed to be humble, but do you have anything else nice to say to me? I need a couple of nice things. It's hard to get over this desire to be appreciated, to be loved, to be respected, whatever, and not forget who's actually the doer, who's actually deserves the respect, who deserves the credit. So, when he takes the Krishna consciousness, one becomes completely aloof from bodily activities. So that we have to see. We've taken the Krishna consciousness to some extent, and to some extent hopefully we're less attached than many people who have not taken to Krishna consciousness. Although sometimes even persons who are not taking to our process are actually more detached than we are from the bodily concept of life, but they're not necessarily attached to Krishna. Like there was one famous Alvar? No, it was actually, he was a member of the famous Sikh guru during the time of Aurangzeb. And I think it was Aurangzeb. It was some famous Muslim emperor. So his brother or something wanted to take over from this Muslim emperor, And he staged a revolution, but he failed, and of course he got killed by this his brother. But it just so happens that this particular, his brother had met with this Muslim, or the Sikh guru. And so this Muslim emperor fanatic, anyone that his brother had association with, he immediately wound up, he arrested and tortured. So the torture was not, they were very expert at torture. First they put you into hot sand and peel off your skin, and they put you, they boil you, and they did so many things. But he was very tolerant, completely aloof from his body. Just like that famous, there was a famous Christian saint, when the Romans were torturing him by frying him on a hot pan, his remark was, you know, this side is done, maybe you can turn me over. Now, if I was put in that situation, I'd try to think about Krishna, but even if I made that remark, it wouldn't be very sincere. So these are personalities that have actually come to a very high platform of detachment from their material body. That doesn't mean that their path is more auspicious than ours. It means that they're more advanced on the path, at least Brahman realization, than we are. Of course, our path is we simultaneously, as much as we realize Krishna, we also realize ourselves as aloof from this body. So their end goal may not, because they're not aware of who Krishna is, they may not become, even when they become perfectly aloof from their body, they would not recognize Krishna or realize Krishna. But we may not be so much aloof, but still, to some degree, we become a little, as much as we become Krishna conscious, then we become aloof. In such a controlled life in which his deliberations are changed, he lives happily within the city of nine gates. In other words, everything depends upon desire, and our desires, we can change our desire by accepting higher desire. And higher desire means we have to see the examples of higher devotees, and especially the most exalted devotees, and try to exemplify their activities and their mood. That's the best way of capturing the higher desires. And therefore our deliberations, instead of following the footsteps of other so-called leaders, politicians, movie stars, sports people, whatever else we're admiring, rather than admiring them, of course we should see that whatever they can do is all by Krishna's mercy. Therefore Prabhupada could watch a movie like Charlie Chaplin and see it as, you know, Krishna. Now, if we watch Charlie Chaplin, we probably would see it a different way. Probably sometimes even pointed out in some lecture that story of how Charlie Chaplin with his girl was at the ball dance, and they were all dressed in tuxedo, long tail coats, and how Charlie, these children were being mischievous, and they put glue on the bench. And then Charlie Chaplin and his wife and his girlfriend sat down on the bench, and when they got up, their coats got ripped off. And Prabhupada said, and then Charlie Chaplin, rather than being embarrassed when they went back to the dance, he just ripped up his coat completely, and she ripped up her dress, whatever. They got back and they danced like wild. So when people saw how wildly they were dancing, they wanted to imitate, because they thought, wow, these people are really into it. They're completely into it. So they ripped up their coats, and also they thought that was part of the process. So we have to choose the right leader, and when we choose the right, of course, we don't choose Charlie Chaplin. First of all, we don't put on coats like that. Well, we choose the right leader and we follow them, and then we'll make progress. And after a while, we can actually see a good example. Well, we can see Krishna's example in practically everyone, whatever they're doing. We can see a good positive or negative example. We can see what we're supposed to do and what we're not supposed to do through the activities of anyone we're looking at. We'll see Krishna everywhere, how Krishna's energies are working everywhere. So the nine gates are mentioned as follows. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is living within living entities, the controller of all living entities all over the universe. So to realize that Krishna is controlling everything is quite a step. If you understand that Krishna is the controller of everything, then when you're Ambarish Maharaj and Durvasa Muni is throwing a weapon at you to kill you, you don't duck. You think, if Krishna wants to save me, Yari Krishna Raki K. Krishna wants to save me, then he'll save me. If he wants to kill me, then he'll kill me. And then in such a state, Krishna throws his Sudarshan Chakra and kills the fiery demon, and Durvasa Muni is in trouble. Now, if we stood there and we kind of like flinched, and we forgot about Krishna, then Krishna wouldn't throw his Sudarshan Chakra. At least not at the fiery demon. He might throw it at us. You rascal devotee. No faith. So we have to develop this faith that actually Krishna is the controller. And the only way of doing that is, before we do something, try to think that Krishna is the controller and what Krishna wants me to do. That he's the proprietor, and I should find out what he wants me to do through Guru Sadhu and Shastra. Pray to the Super Soul with my heart to find out what he wants me to do. Think of Prabhupada. Think of his representatives and think what they want me to do. And then do it without attachment to please Krishna. And let the results happen, whatever Krishna's results are. And even if the results are not so good, then we learn from them. If they're good, then we don't take credit for them, because we did it as a service. But unless we go through that process and recognize that we're servants of Krishna, then the result is we'll get caught up in the result. The result is good, we'll take credit for it. The result is bad, then we'll become disturbed by it, by the fact that people don't appreciate me. They didn't appreciate what I did. Not that we shouldn't learn from their feedback, but we shouldn't become disturbed by it. We should do it as a service rather than as an attempt to gain something. But when he identifies with himself, with the Lord, with himself, he becomes just as free as the Lord. So when we're actually Krishna conscious, then we won't worry so much, because we'll see everything is being done by Krishna through his different energies, not only for myself, but for everyone. Everyone is under Krishna's control. And we'll get the ultimate reward, that is, we'll be able to think of, see Krishna everywhere outside, and think of Krishna within, and be happy as Krishna's instrument to helping others become Krishna conscious. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
You made the demonstration of how Krishna, through the spiritual energy, produced the verses 20 through 23 from chapter 6, both in Sanskrit and in English. But when I try, I can say Yatro paramate chitam nirodha yoga sevaya.
Yatra chevatmanatman. Anyhow, it takes practice. When Krishna sees we want to learn something, then he'll help us remember it.
So practice is also required on our part.
Yeah, of course. Because
so what's the how much practice is what is the proper ratio of?
It depends on how much we concentrate. Just taking from, did you ever read Vilap Kushamandri? So in there, Radharani, she has her mandris, such as Rati or Tulsi Mandri. So she teaches Tulsi Mandri how to sing a certain song that she composes when she's with Krishna to enhance the mood. So she's teaching Rati Mandri some song, and then Krishna comes, because Krishna is attracted by hearing that there's songs of love being sung. So he comes and then he asks Rati to sing. So she sings exactly what Srimati Radharani sings, exactly in the same melody, exactly in the same mood. And Krishna is absorbed in ecstasy listening to Rati singing, and so is Srimati Radharani. So that's called attention. Now, how to come to that platform, that will develop as we become Krishna conscious, so that we become one with what we're saying. Now, there's techniques of doing it, but I think it's just a question. I mean, when I recite it, I have no idea what's going on. I mean, it gives me a good idea that obviously I'm not reciting it because I have no idea what I'm saying. It's just coming, you know, Krishna is just supplying the remembrance, that's all. Now it would be a good idea for me to learn what it is. Then I'd actually get some benefit from it. Otherwise than that, yatra paramite chitam niruddha yoga sevaya yatra trevatmanatmanam pashanatmini tushati sukham adyantikam yatad buddhigram. I mean, I could say it and get absolutely zero benefit from saying it. Or I could actually say it and concentrate on it, try to listen to it myself, try and understand what I'm saying, and then probably what would happen if I listened to it carefully, I'd probably find out that, you know, what I don't really understand what I'm saying. Yatra. If you ask me for the definition of yatra, and if I thought about it, I have to look it up. And it probably here says, in that state of affairs, where? And then you have to remember, yata, dipo, nivata, sto, nengate, so the whole thing before. Yatra paramite, paramite, uparamite, cease, because one feels transcendental happiness. So then I actually have to study it more. So that when I said yatra paramite chitam, it actually has some meaning to me, rather than just, you know, Krishna just giving me the remembrance for some reason. Then I actually become Krishna conscious, a little bit more Krishna conscious.
Thank you. Thank you very much for mentioning how to cultivate higher desires. You gave the example, you mentioned that we meditate on the mood, on the example and the actions and the mood of the Mahajans, the great devotees. And you gave the example of singing the Nrisimha prayers. So this applies to absolutely all our activities in devotional service. May I ask you, would you be kind to maybe think of some possible heroes or role models or Mahajans for, let's say, book distribution, in which mode we can, whom we can meditate upon for book distribution, for Harinams, for...
Well, so many devotees. I mean, I was distributing books in Chicago O'Hare with, at that time, the biggest book distributors in the world, such as Tribhurai Maharaj, Bhrigosh, Prabhupada's disciple, Vaishasika. And I'd go out every day. We'd all be in a competition. So I just watched them, and if they distributed a book, then out of envy or out of desire, whatever, then I distributed a book too. Because Krishna, you know, everything was based on desire. So, of course, some bit of technique, but not very much technique, mostly desire. Desire, and ultimately the only sustaining desire would be a desire to, you know, to please Prabhupada. So then we can meditate on Prabhupada. How he went to cafes, tea stalls. When he was in America, he was going to different places and trying to sell his Bhagavatams. So we can meditate on it. And feeling Prabhupada's desire to spread, the main thing is experiencing and watching others, their desire to distribute Krishna consciousness. And ultimately we meditate on Prabhupada, his strong desire to distribute Krishna consciousness. Then we get even more desirous when we feel his desire. But the practical speaking is when you're out with others and you can practically experience directly much more easily than even trying to meditate on Prabhupada. You can see it right in front of you. And that goes for everything. appreciation of what the devotees are doing actually increases our desire, and criticism destroys it. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandharaj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.